Imagine walking up to someone who has just been thrown into like a freezing damp prison cell, grabbing their hand and enthusiastically congratulating them.
Which is, yeah, that sounds completely unhinged.
Right? It sounds like absolute madness. It sounds cruel, honestly. But today, to you, our beloved family members, we are going to explore why that exact jarring paradox is actually the absolute pinnacle of biblical
It
blessing.
really is.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we are sharing an exploration of a profoundly challenging sermon message delivered by Pastor Lee Kyu Hyun of Seonggo Church, which really focuses on Matthew 5, verses 10 through 12.
Yeah, and the core question we have to wrestle with today is, what if the ultimate blessing from God doesn't guarantee you a life of comfort?
Oh,
What
man.
if it actually, what if it guarantees a violent, inevitable clash with the world around you?
It completely shatters our modern sanitized expectations, doesn't it? Like what we think a blessed life looks
Oh,
like.
totally. Because the text we're exploring today from the sermon message, it unpacks the eighth and final teaching of the Beatitudes.
Right.
And right out of the gate, it forces two words together that our human brains desperately want to keep as far apart as possible.
Blessing and persecution.
Exactly. I mean, from a purely sociological or just human perspective, being persecuted means you failed.
Yeah, you're losing.
Right. It means you're marginalized, disliked, losing the game of life. So to call that a blessing requires a complete, just a total rewiring of how we understand reality.
I really need us to break down the mechanics of this because my brain definitely naturally rebels against that pairing.
Sure.
Why on earth would living out the earlier Beatitudes, like being merciful, being a peacemaker, being pure in heart, why does that inevitably cause a collision?
It's a great question.
I mean, shouldn't society absolutely love and celebrate people who act like that?
You'd naturally assume that, right? But Pastor Lee points out this fundamental friction in the sermon message. The values of the Beatitudes aren't just slightly different from the world's values,
Right?
they are a complete inverted mirror image. Just think about the basic operating system of modern society.
Self-promotion.
Exactly.
Ugh.
Aggressive ambition, hoarding resources, fiercely defending your own ego.
Yeah, looking out for number one.
Always. But then Jesus steps onto a mountainside and says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek."
Wow.
And when you operate on that inverted system, you aren't just passively living a quiet, nice life. You are an active disruption.
It's like stepping onto one of those really high-speed moving walkways at a major airport.
Oh, I hate those.
Right. But imagine deciding to walk in the exact opposite direction of everybody else.
That is a great way to visualize it.
Yeah.
You're stepping onto a mechanism that is literally designed to move everyone in one specific direction.
Right. And if you do that, you are mathematically bound to collide with people. You don't even have to be trying to cause a scene.
No, shoulders are going to bump.
People are going to drop their luggage,
Yeah.
and they aren't just going to politely step around
No,
you.
they're going to yell at you.
Exactly. But here's the part I struggle to fully grasp. Why is the reaction so intensely hostile? Why doesn't the world just roll its eyes, say, to each their own and keep walking?
Because your very presence going the wrong way induces massive cognitive dissonance.
Oh,
The
interesting.
world doesn't just ignore believers who genuinely live out the Beatitudes. It actively pushes back because true meekness exposes the sheer arrogance of the surrounding culture.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, when someone is genuinely pure in heart, it acts as this devastating mirror. It reflects the hidden corruption and the shallow self-interest of everyone else in the room.
It makes them look bad.
Exactly. Society pushes back with hostility because its own corrupt operating system is being exposed, and people just hate feeling exposed.
Okay, yeah, I see that. But let's pause and get really honest for a second here.
Okay.
If we are constantly bumping into people on this metaphorical walkway, getting yelled at, losing friends, facing constant conflict at work, how do we know we are actually facing biblical persecution? Because, I mean, I see people all the time, maybe they're incredibly arrogant online, or they treat their coworkers with this like condescending, exclusive attitude.
Oh, yeah, the holier than thou vibe.
Exactly. And then when people naturally get annoyed at them, they throw their hands up and claim, oh, look at this holy persecution I'm suffering for my faith.
That is such a massive trap.
Yeah.
And the sermon message actually directly confronts this danger.
Oh, good.
It brings in the work of theologian Richard Mao, specifically his concept of uncommon decency.
Uncommon decency.
Yeah. Mao argues that we have to be ruthlessly honest about the actual source of the pushback we receive.
Meaning.
Meaning, Are people reacting to the gospel, or are they just reacting to our own lack of basic human decency?
Oh, wow.
Christians are called to navigate a non-Christian society with profound love, dignity, respect, and politeness.
So it's about doing a brutal internal audit.
Yes, precisely.
We have to stop playing the victim and ask, you know, am I being rejected because I look too much like Jesus? Or am I being rejected because I'm just being obnoxious?
Exactly that. Pastor Lee gives a very stern warning here. We absolutely cannot confuse the natural consequences of our own social immaturity or our tactlessness or our bad manners with righteous suffering.
Right. If I'm just a jerk, that's not Jesus's fault.
Exactly. If you're a notoriously lazy employee and you get fired, that's not religious persecution.
Yeah.
That is just the consequence of poor character.
Yeah.
Deep, honest self-reflection is the mandatory toll you have to pay before you can even begin to claim the blessing of Matthew 5.
All right, so let's play this out to its logical extreme then. Let's say someone does the audit. They are incredibly self-aware. They are perfectly polite, deeply loving, hardworking, respectful. They walk with that uncommon decency you just mentioned.
Sure.
Does the friction finally stop? Do they get a pass from the world?
I know we want the answer to be yes, but ironically, no.
Wait, really?
Yeah. That is precisely when the true foundational pushback begins. You can be the most flawless, loving person in the office, and the friction will still come.
That feels so counterintuitive, though. If we're doing everything right, why would anyone attack us?
Because we have to zoom out and look at the spiritual reality beneath the social surface.
Okay.
The sermon message grounds this dynamic in the theology of John chapter 3. It reveals that this isn't just a clash of cultural preferences or like political opinions.
Right.
It is a cosmic fundamental collision of light versus darkness. And the text in John is clear. Darkness inherently aggressively hates the light.
Wow.
We don't have to look any further than Jesus himself. I mean, he lived the only absolutely flawless, perfectly loving life in the history of humanity.
The ultimate uncommon decency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yet he was brutally tortured and executed.
Right.
Because his truth and his uncompromised love were a lethal threat to the power structures and the religious hypocrisy of his time.
You know, it makes me think about, imagine being in a pitch black room. You've been in there for hours. You're comfortable, you're warm, your eyes are fully adjusted to the dark. Maybe you're even hiding something in the corner.
Right.
And then suddenly, someone throws open the door and flips on a battery of blindingly bright industrial fluorescent lights.
Oh man, your immediate reaction isn't gratitude.
Not at all. You don't say, oh, thank you so much for the beautiful illumination. You scream.
Yeah.
You shield your eyes. You are instantly furious at the person who flipped the switch.
Absolutely.
And you aren't mad because the light is inherently evil. You're mad because the light hurts your unadjusted eyes, it disrupts your comfortable slumber, and it forcefully exposes whatever you were hiding in the dark.
Yeah.
The brighter and purer that light is, the angrier you get.
And that anger is exactly what Acts 14.22 is talking about when it says, we must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God.
Must.
Notice the word must. It doesn't say might or, you know, occasionally will. It is a certainty. The sermon message connects this to the brutal history of early Korean missionaries. These were men and women who bled and literally gave their lives.
Unbelievable.
And not because they were obnoxious, but precisely because their light was so undeniably, aggressively bright in a deeply dark time. The profound theological point here is that experiencing this specific type of pushback, the light exposing darkness pushback, is actually a diagnostic tool.
Wait, a diagnostic tool, meaning it proves something about our faith.
It is the ultimate proof of life.
Mm-hmm.
When you face that hostility without having compromised your character, it is tangible, undeniable evidence that you are genuinely holding on to the true faith.
Mm-hmm.
You are walking in the light.
But that raises a pretty terrifying question for us today.
How so?
Well, if facing this pushback is the definitive proof of true faith, what does it mean if our lives are completely 100% peaceful? Like, what if everyone loves us, we never experience a moment of friction, and our faith never costs us a single relationship or opportunity? Is an easy life actually a giant red flag?
Looking at the broad sweep of Christian history, Pastor Lee argues that a persecution-free, totally comfortable environment is actually far more dangerous for believers than active opposition.
Really? More dangerous?
It sounds strange, I know.
Mm-hmm.
But Christianity has always bloomed most purely and grown most authentically under the crushing weight of severe persecution.
I'm picturing an astronaut who spends months in a zero gravity environment
Okay, yeah.
because there's no resistance, like no gravity constantly pushing down on them, forcing their muscles to work just to stand up. Their body literally begins to break down.
Right.
Their muscles atrophy, their bone density plummets. So does total societal comfort basically create a zero gravity environment for the soul, like breeding spiritually atrophied believers?
That's the exact danger. The text gives us another powerful image from nature.
Weeds.
Weeds. Yeah, certain types of resilient weeds actually grow deeper roots and become vastly stronger the more they are aggressively stepped on.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. In the early church, identifying as a follower of Jesus meant utter social ruin. It meant the confiscation of your property, being ostracized by your family, or facing a gruesome death in a Roman arena.
Right. The stakes were literally life and death.
Because the stakes were that high,
Yeah.
there was absolutely zero incentive for a fake Christian to exist.
Right. Why would you fake it?
Exactly. Nobody is going to casually pretend to believe something if the reward for pretending is being thrown to wild animals.
That makes total sense.
The sheer cost of entry kept the community stunningly pure. But when society becomes comfortable, when it culturally accepts this watered-down, harmless version of faith that doesn't demand anything from you,
It dulls everything.
it dulls the unstoppable vitality of the gospel. Comfort is the zero-gravity environment that destroys the church from the inside out.
Okay, so if the lack of tension is that incredibly dangerous to our spiritual health, what is the game plan for our beloved family members listening right now?
Right.
If the world is a corrupting influence and comfort is a slow poison, shouldn't we just like retreat?
Retreat.
Yeah. Should we just buy a massive plot of land, build high walls, isolate ourselves entirely with like-minded believers, and just hide out to keep our muscles strong and our faith pure?
It's a very tempting instinct. Throughout history, monastic movements have tried exactly that.
Yeah.
But the sermon message firmly, unequivocally, counters the idea of isolation. God's design is not a quarantined, walled-off country club for believers.
So what's the alternative?
The command is to go into the world. We are called to be the salt and the light, right in the dead center of the decay and the darkness. We have to demonstrate the transformative, disruptive power of the gospel in our public daily lives.
But I have to push back on that because conceptually it sounds beautiful, but practically it sounds like an impossible tightrope.
It's not easy, that's for sure.
Let's talk about Monday morning. If we go out into this fiercely competitive, cutthroat corporate world, our actual livelihood is on the line.
Yes, it is.
The pressure to just slightly bend our values, maybe laugh at a cruel joke your boss makes, massage the numbers on a quarterly report, or just stay quiet during an unethical business deal to ensure you get that promotion. It's immense.
The pressure is very real.
We have families to feed. How in the world do we survive out there without bending to the pressure?
That tension you're describing is the absolute core of the Christian life. And how we survive it comes down to a fundamental question of allegiance.
Allegiance.
Yes, Pastor Lee is uncompromising here, and he quotes Jesus directly to make the point. You cannot serve both God and money. You cannot serve two masters.
But practically, what does that look like in the moment of pressure? Like when you're sweating in the boardroom?
It means pre-deciding your boundaries before the crisis hits and recognizing that your ultimate security does not come from your paycheck.
That's tough.
It's incredibly tough. True, authentic faith cannot be permanently compartmentalized into a 2-hour Sunday window. It has to bleed into your financial decisions, your emails, your workplace ethics. Surviving without bending means accepting that your refusal to compromise with the world's corrupt systems will inevitably trigger the exact persecution we've been talking about.
You'll lose out.
You will lose the promotion. You might lose the client. But the framework for surviving it isn't just gritting your teeth. It requires a mindset shift that looks completely insane to the outside world.
And that brings us to, honestly, the most baffling part of the entire text. We don't just endure the loss of the promotion. We don't just stoically accept the mocking. We are commanded to actually find joy in the pushback.
Yes, and this is the spiritual climax of the sermon message. Matthew 5.1 doesn't just say tolerate it, it issues a direct, astonishing command. Rejoice and be glad when you are persecuted because of righteousness.
Rejoice.
Pastor Lee openly admits this is arguably the hardest command in the entire Bible. How do you biologically, emotionally rejoice when your reputation is being destroyed or you are facing financial ruin for doing the right thing?
It makes me think of an Olympic athlete in the middle of the most agonizing, grueling training session of their life. Oh, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. Their lungs are burning, their muscles are physically tearing, they are sweating and totally exhausted. They do not inherently love the pain itself. They aren't masochists who just enjoy hurting.
Right. The pain itself isn't the point.
Exactly. But they rejoice in that incredibly difficult process because their mind is hyper-focused on the podium. They can practically feel the gold medal around their neck. The temporary agony is just the necessary stepping stone to ultimate glory.
And that analogy perfectly captures the biblical theology of suffering. The sermon message anchors this concept in some of the most profound moments in Scripture.
Like what?
Well, look at Acts 5.41. The apostles are dragged before the religious leaders, flogged, and ordered never to speak of Jesus again. And what does the text say?
I don't recall exactly.
It says they left the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer dishonor for the name.
Rejoicing after being flogged. It's staggering.
It defies all human logic. It does, until you read Romans 8.18, right?
Yeah.
Where Paul says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us.
Yes. Or 2 Corinthians 4.17, which contrasts our light and momentary troubles with an eternal glory that far outweighs them all.
Light and momentary.
The early Christians didn't enjoy suffering for the sake of suffering. They rejoiced because they had an unshakable, concrete certainty that their eternal reward, the ultimate gold medal, was incomparably heavier, vastly greater, and infinitely longer lasting than their fleeting earthly pain. The math simply made sense to them.
So as we bring this out of the first century and into our living rooms today, how do we apply this?
What?
Because the sermon message does a beautiful job of landing the plane by bringing this heavy historical reality right into the context of the modern Korean church.
It does.
It reminds us that the very foundation of the faith so many of us practice freely today was quite literally built on the blood of martyrs.
It is a sobering reality.
Cool.
Pastor Lee points specifically to figures like Pastor Ju Kishul.
Ah.
During the Japanese colonial period, the imperial government mandated that all Koreans, including Christians, worship at Shinto shrines. It was framed as a simple civic duty, you know, just a small compromise.
Right, just go along to get along.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Pastor Ju absolutely refused to bow to an idol.
And the cost for him was unimaginable.
It was. He was imprisoned, horribly tortured, including being forced to walk on boards studded with exposed nails, and eventually died in prison.
Oh, man.
He possessed that unshakable certainty of eternal glory, and he just refused to bend his knee to the world's demands, no matter the physical agony.
Hearing a story like that, it's incredibly humbling, but it also highlights how drastically different our current battle is.
Right.
For you, our beloved family members joining us in this exploration, the vast majority of us are not facing the threat of physical torture. We aren't being forced to walk on nails or face hungry lions.
And because our battle is different, it requires a different kind of vigilance. The sermon message diagnoses our modern enemy perfectly. It is the silent, numbing, insidious enemy of complacency.
Complacency.
Yes, Anenhum. Our greatest threat isn't a government throwing us in jail. It's a culture perfectly designed to lull us to sleep.
Wow, that's chilling.
The great, fierce challenge for believers today is to hold tightly to the radical, upside-down values of the Beatitudes and fight a daily spiritual war against a dulled, atrophied faith in an era of unprecedented comfort and convenience.
Which brings us to a final provocative thought for you, our beloved family members, to wrestle with as you go about your week. It builds on everything we've explored in today's sermon message.
I'm ready for it.
In the first century, or even in the 1940s in Korea, a true Christian was easily identified by their willingness to physically die for their faith. The proof was in their blood.
Right.
But today, in our zero-gravity environment of ease, what is the identifying mark of a Christian who is successfully fighting complacency?
That's the real question.
In your own daily routine, in your specific office, in your specific neighborhood, what does it actually look like to be a martyr to comfort? What are you purposefully sacrificing when absolutely no one is forcing you to sacrifice anything?
That is the ultimate diagnostic question right there. Are we willing to step off the comfortable moving walkway, endure the collisions, and purposefully walk toward the light, even when it costs us our reputation or our ease?
That is the challenge before all of us. Thank you so much for joining us in this deeply challenging shared exploration of the Word, our beloved family members. We hope these profound truths anchor you, push you out of complacency, and bring you that inexplicable, paradoxical joy in the face of whatever friction you encounter this week. Until we gather together again, keep walking in the light.